This is The End User, episode 136 for Tuesday, June 4th. One window per pixel. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Mon.
Taylor, we missed you for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was on many travels and adventures, but I'm back, and I'm really excited to be hosting The End User again.
Yeah, we've got a truckload of news. A lot has happened since you've left.
Yeah, I was trying to keep up with it while I was away, but it pretty hard.
Oh, no.
Did you talk about the Xbox yet?
No, we didn't get a chance to talk about the Xbox because the event happening the day after we last recorded. So,
man, we must be the last podcast on the internet to talk about the Xbox.
Yeah, that's probably
true. The Xbox One.
The Xbox One. Yeah, well, do you want to get into that one first?
No, okay. Let's hit some people with some fresh news first.
Okay, we'll get into some Computex news. That's the event that is happening right now, and a lot of companies are announcing their new devices, that in particular that are using the new Intel Haswell chip that's coming out. They've got a bunch of kind of reference devices that they're announcing for a future release date. And the first one that's pretty interesting is the Asus ZenBook Infinity. And the details are a little light on it. You know, you basically just got to see what it looked like and what it was designed like. And it's got a Gorilla Glass 3 and a touchscreen. So other than that, it looks pretty similar to the previous ZenBooks. And by that, I mean fantastic.
Yeah, it looks as if it has Gorilla Glass on both the front and back of the lid, so the display and the cover of the top of the computer, and then with a touchscreen there too. So it looks pretty cool, but that's a lot of Gorilla Glass.
That is. And it's 15.5 millimeters thick. It's funny. I feel like we've gotten to a point where it's like, okay, it's thin enough. Any thinner and you're going to start to make computer knives or something.
I don't know, Chris. I want thinner. I want them to be two-dimensional.
Two-dimensional?
Two-dimensional. That's right.
All right. Well, let me know when that happens. Then we'll really have a story. And you can maybe you could 3D print the two-dimensional computer. How about that?
I wouldn't have to. I could just regular 2D print it.
You could print it out in ink, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. It would be very special ink.
Oh, yeah. So if you want to get your eyes on the details, we've got a link to the Engadget story. Because, you know, like I said, the details were a little slim. So you really have to go see how awesome this thing looks.
Yes. And then I guess later we'll find out how awesome it is or isn't.
Yeah, when it actually ships. So we'll see what happens when it ships. More Asus. We've got a ton of Asus news leading the show here. So more Asus news. They've also announced the Transformer Pad Infinity. And one of its very interesting things is that it's got a 2560 by 1600 display, which is kind of unique. And it's also one of these kind of devices where you can have a keyboard and then rip the screen off the top of it.
Right. Well, 2560 by 1600, so that would be like the same resolution as the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro, but then this is a 10-inch display,
right.
So that is a very high resolution.
More density.
For a 10-inch tablet. I mean, it's higher than the iPad with Retina display.
Oh, and I should have mentioned when we talked about the ZenBook, presumably, if their pattern holds true, the ZenBook is going to be running some flavor of Windows, and the Transformer here that we're talking about will be some flavor of Android.
Right. Well, we know for sure that this Transformer Pad Infinity is an Android tablet. We're only assuming that the ZenBook is Windows.
Right.
But it's a fairly safe assumption.
Yeah, if their pattern holds true, that's what's going to happen. So it's got a Tegra 4 chip. It's got 2 gigs of RAM, a rather measly 5-megapixel camera. But really, it's that screen that's kind of unique.
Right, and their signature docking QWERTY keyboard with a touchpad.
Right. Now, I've used that keyboard, and it's pretty decent, you know, for what it is, for being a tablet keyboard. It's really thin, and there's not much play to the keys, but it's a pretty decent keyboard for what it is.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's sort of their brand. That's, you know, they're the tablets that have the connectable keyboards, and everybody's trying to do that, but they want to have, one that's first party that then works. So yeah. It's good that it's good.
Yeah, definitely, definitely good. So let's get into the Transformer book. This is the new one with Android and Windows, and that's not something we've seen before. So this is kind of weird. You can switch between Windows and Android with the click of a button, and I'm not sure why one would want to do that, but that's one of its capabilities. Would you do that?
Well, I think the way that they set this up, it's the same type of form factor, so it's a tablet with a detachable keyboard. But in this one, both of them are basically full, or I guess half, computers. So all the Android tablet architecture is in the tablet, in the screen, and then you've got a whole separate battery and CPU running Windows in the keyboard part of it.
So I guess the point is that not necessarily that you want to switch between them with the click of a button, but the point is that you can rip the screen off and have an Android tablet when you do that. But then when you get home and you plug it into the dock, then you're running Windows like a normal laptop. So I guess right. I could see that.
That's definitely what they're going for here. And, it's not hard to imagine that there would be a consumer who is looking for something exactly like that. You know, they want to have the portability of a tablet, but then they want to be able to, just use that same device and attach it to something else and make it more powerful.
Yeah, and this is the new Intel Atoms that is powering this thing. And that's a little interesting. They rebranded Atom recently, and I've always associated Atom with really low-power, cheap computers. And that's kind of not the case anymore. They're starting to bring that forward a little bit.
Right. Definitely keeping an emphasis on the low power, but they've brought the performance up a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. So, I don't know. That's an interesting one. We'll see if it does well in the market. Now that you say that, see, I was left wondering because I wasn't sure why anybody would just like want to hit a button and switch over to Android. Or if you were using a tablet, why you would want to go switch to Windows. But the way you just put it made a lot more sense.
Right.
All right, and get excited about the new Asus 4K monitor. What do you think about this? It's a 31.5-inch, 3840 by 2160 monitor.
Isn't right, that? So that's four times the resolution of 1080p.
Right.
And it's very high density. And it's using the new IGZO LCD manufacturing process. And it's supposed to look great, and it better look great because it's aimed generally at graphics professionals. You know, this is not generally for consumers. Until the new Haswell chips hit the market, there's not a consumer computer that can even drive this level of display. There's no computer that can push 4K video natively.
Yeah, you really need a pretty big graphics card. It's funny, you know, we've all but forgotten about...
Well, even with a big graphics card, they don't have the software or the firmware to push those kind of pixels. So it's supported, if you happen to have a graphics card with two display ports built in, some of them support that, but again, not a lot of consumer cards have that. With the release of Haswell, they'll have a new spec called DisplayPort 1.2, which will support the 4K resolution.
Right, and HDMI 1.4 supports it as well. So it's funny, you know, until this device, I've never really even thought about, oh, my monitor would not work with my graphics card. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
That's not something you usually have to consider unless you're talking about games.
But, from now on, basically, I think computers will be more and more made to support these kinds of displays. But they haven't announced a release date or a price, but we can expect this to be multiple thousands of dollars, not aimed at just picking up for your home office.
Yeah, it's going to be somewhere around the order of magnitude of like 5,000 or more, something like that is my guess.
Yeah, that would be our guess.
Yeah, so we're not going to see this anytime soon in our households, but I'm looking forward to it. And do you think 4K matters at all?
Yeah, I think this is the future of desktop computing.
Because there's that graph out there that says, well, as you get a certain distance away from a monitor, it starts to not matter. I don't know off the top of my head where that distance would start to drop off with a 31.5-inch monitor. But we've got to be getting close there.
Well, with a 4K monitor, that gets really close. But up until, you know, if you have a 27 or a 30-inch display on your desk and you're sitting right in front of it, even at a resolution like 2560 by 1440, which is the current maximum for most of those displays, it's very much pixelated. You're very much within that range. And so the idea of these, you know, the quote-unquote retina displays is to get you outside of that range where all the pixels blend together, even when you're sitting very close. For a 30-inch monitor, which has become fairly commonplace, you know, even in casual home users, this is the resolution that you need to be able to have that seamless, pixel-less experience at your desk.
Yeah, I could see that. So maybe it matters less for televisions and it matters more for desktop monitors.
That's exactly right. I suppose that may seem counterintuitive to some people, but that's the facts as I see them.
Yeah, and I'm kind of excited to see what IGZO brings to the table as well, because that's not something I've laid my eyes on quite yet.
Well, you probably won't be able to see it very well, but it's the technology that makes these kinds of displays possible.
Right, right. So I don't know. That's pretty exciting. I feel like this is definitely the first of its class that I've seen even talked about. Like not even being released. I mean, even talked about in the first place.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. And I think these are going to become commonplace in the next few years.
Yeah, I hope so.
I would know. I'm from the future.
Yeah, so you already know that they're going to be commonplace in a few years.
Which is why I have to explain it to you and everyone else.
So a rather wacky announcement from Asus. They've released, they're calling it the Vivo Mouse. And this is a touchpad and a mouse combination that you can use with Windows 8. Well, I'm sure other operating systems as well, but you have to go see the picture here. And again, we've got a link in the show notes if you'd like to see it. But the mouse is this, it almost looks like a shaver, like an electric shaver. But it's got a circular touchpad on the top of it, and then it kind of tapers off into a mouse kind of thing. So it's really bizarro looking, but it's kind of like over-designed, I think. But I guess it looks interesting, that's for sure.
This thing looks futuristic even to me. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, so I can't imagine myself using this. It seems a little too wacky to me, but I'm glad to see Asus kind of thinking outside of the box.
It seems to be that's what they do every Computex, right? They just throw all the ideas they can at us, and they just see what sticks.
Yep,
and we've actually got a couple more of those crazy ideas coming up in the afterburners.
Yeah, so this mouse has a partner, and it's called the Vivo PC, which is a kind of like the Mac Mini. It's a small form factor PC that with all of that beautiful brushed aluminum on it. It looks pretty cool. I could see this coming to a home theater near you.
Okay, would you pick up something like this for your next home theater?
I don't know, because I've got one that's relatively future-proofed already. I mean, it's Sandy Bridge. It's pretty current already. So, but if I were in the market, yeah, this thing would be high on the list. And I don't know about the mouse, but the small form factor computer looks pretty nice. But the details are light, so I'm not sure if it would be able to handle everything that I could throw at it. So I'd have to test that bit out first.
Right. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait until we get more details.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we've got new Computex announcements from Samsung, starting with the Galaxy S4 Mini. Now, how big is the Galaxy S4? They got it up to 5 inches even, right? The screen? So how big do you think the Galaxy S4 Mini is? What size screen does the Mini have?
It's got to be 3.5 inches.
Nope. You were close, but it's 4.3. That was probably the size of the Galaxy S1.
Yeah, that's the... I remember... So the first phone that I thought was too big was that size.
And now it's their smallest phone.
Yeah, that's right. So clearly I'm being left in the dust, but that was the... You remember the Droid X? That was the one I'm thinking of.
Right, that was 4.3. That sounds about right. Or maybe that was 4.5.
No, I think it was 4.3, if I remember correctly. And that was the point in time where I picked it up and I just thought, this is too much.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm sure if you pick this one up, you would actually think it's probably pretty small. I mean, they've got the rest of the phone a lot smaller these days, too, so that's got to count for something.
Yeah, so it's looking at the entire Android market, it's kind of goofy how big these phones have gotten. And the fact that this device is one of the smallest, one of the smaller Android phones now is kind of crazy.
That's right. It still has some pretty decent specs. It has a 960 by 540 screen resolution, dual core 1.7 gigahertz, you know, front and rear facing cameras with good specs. And they supposedly designed it to be easier to use and carry with one hand, including some adjustments to Samsung's TouchWiz interface.
Yeah, which I could do without. I'd rather just have Android than...
but it's nice that they at least redesigned their interface to try to make it better from a user perspective.
Yeah,
based
well, they,
on the size.
They it used to be really, really ridiculous. They've definitely dialed it back a fair bit, and it's a lot better to use than it used to be. I still got to think that... just stock Android does the job for the most part. There's not much I need to enhance about Android. It's already there. So you're just kind of adding something on top that doesn't add much. And as a consequence, you're not getting the latest Android updates and stuff like that. So I still think it's kind of a bad thing. But you're right. They have dialed it back a little bit, and that's definitely a good thing.
Well, I agree with you completely. I still think that stock Android is the way... to go above any manufacturer add-on, especially Samsung's TouchWiz. But that wasn't the only announcement from Samsung. Do you want to tell us about the new Galaxy Tab 3 tablets?
Yeah, Computex rolls on, doesn't it? So they've also announced the Galaxy Tab 3. They've got two flavors. There's one 8-inch device and one 10.1-inch device.
Well, they had already announced a Galaxy Tab 3 7-inch, so they are expanding the Galaxy Tab 3 line.
Right. So they're... it's funny because usually you see the larger device have more processing capability of some sort, and that's really not the case here. I guess they're pretty much the same internals, which is kind of interesting. They've got a different screen, obviously, because they're different sizes, but the internals, the processor and the RAM are pretty much the same.
So I'm trying to think of all the tablets and phones that Samsung is offering currently right now, and they've basically have all come out in the last few months. So you could buy these and know that you're buying the latest Samsung tablet or phone, and there is a lot of bleed over and confusion in the middle there. But you can get a 10.1-inch tablet, a 9.7-inch tablet, an 8-inch tablet, a 7-inch tablet, a 6-inch tablet, or a 6-inch phone, a 5.5-inch tablet, or a 5.5-inch phone, a 5-inch phone, a 4.5-inch phone, or a 4.3 phone. But you can't go any smaller than that.
No, that's the cutoff. Well, when you put it like that, it sounds a lot more ridiculous, doesn't it?
I'm just trying to understand their strategy here. I'm laying everything out on the table and looking at it and being like, what are you doing, guys? What's the plan here?
Well, people want different things, so they're providing everything that everyone else wanted ever.
Except for a phone that fits in one hand comfortably.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Although you could debate the smaller phone, but yeah, that's pretty much what it seems like. I got to think at some point in time, these guys are going to dial it back a little bit. I think there is probably a pretty heavy market for a phone that is like 3.5 inches. I've got to imagine there are plenty of people out there that would want that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Is anybody's pockets that small?
Well, no, I mean, yeah, there are some people whose pockets are that small. And I think there's quite a few of them.
I mean, it seemed I went from 3.5 inches to 4 inches with the iPhone 5, and at no point have I been like, "Oh, geez, I wish this thing was smaller." I can't imagine a scenario for that.
Well, I mean, for myself, I definitely don't think that. I'm got the 8X, and it's either 4.2 or 4.3. I'd have to look it up, but it's just about right. And I don't think I'd want to get any bigger than that, and I don't think that I'd want to get any smaller than that either, but
If you had smaller hands, you might want to be smaller.
Yeah, I know there are a ton of people who are not me out there that would enjoy an actual top-of-the-line but smaller smartphone. I'm pretty sure there's a kind of large bottom of the market that would buy that kind of device.
I think you're right. And right now, all those people are buying iPhones.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true, because you look at all the, 30-inch Android tablets, and they're too big for your pocket.
Yes, 30 inches is way too big for my pocket.
Yeah, so the only difference we've got is the 8-inch has a 5-megapixel camera, and the 10-inch has a 1.3-megapixel camera. So the otherwise, the internals are the same. They're that same 1.5 gigahertz chip with a gig and a half of RAM.
All right. Well, in that case, I think we've talked enough about the new Samsung tablets.
All right. So let's get into Dell is in the news as well. And they've got a device here that is kind of like the, you remember the Lenovo Yoga?
Sure. It flips around backwards.
Yeah, so this basically does the same thing as that. It's 11.6 inches across. It's 2560 by 1440, which is pretty dense. Like you said, I think that is kind of the standard dense screen right now. And it's 11.6 inches, so I feel like that's a pretty good size tablet. And it's a pretty small laptop, so they're kind of straddling in between there. But yeah, what makes this kind of interesting is that it can fold back upon itself and become a tablet, just kind of like the Yoga does and like the Surface does. So what is a little interesting here is the keyboard is somewhere between the Surface touch cover and the type cover. It's the keys have give to it, but there's not very much.
Right. Well, the Dell XPS 13, you know, the bigger brother to this computer, has been a fantastic flagship device for Dell. And they seem to have gone just in a completely different direction. They're targeting a completely different market for the XPS 11. But if they built it with an eye to quality like they did on the XPS 13, then this could be a really great 11-inch laptop type thing.
Yeah, and it's a real computer. It's a Core i5 Haswell, which, again, this is why we're talking about it in the first place, is that everybody is starting to build or release details on their Haswell machines, so this is one of them. And it's going to be available sometime in the holiday season is what they told us. So I'm liking what I see. It looks pretty nice.
Yeah, it's all going to depend on the build quality and the material quality. You know, how well does the touchscreen work? The keyboard might be pretty thin, but it might work pretty well. It's a very strange keyboard design. They've gone completely the opposite direction from those chiclet-style imprinted keyboards, which are so popular right now.
Yeah, that was... did the Mac start that? Is that who started that trend?
I could say yes, but I'm sure someone would disagree with me. So well, I guess I'll just say yes with that caveat.
They popularized it. They maybe didn't invent it, but they popularized the notion of it.
Probably.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks quite interesting. We'll get some more details when we get closer to the holiday season. So, as always, the months leading up to the holiday season are always kind of crazy for the release of gadgets, and this will be one of them. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I would like to get my fingers on this. All right, is there anything else from Computex that we should talk about?
No, let's get out of Computex land for a minute, although we'll probably go right back into Computex land during the afterburners at some point.
Fantastic. So, Chris, I was out of town. I heard a little bit about this Xbox One announcement. I know a few things about it, but I bet you know a lot more. The main thing that I know is that people have been abbreviating it to XB1, which then gets further abbreviated to Xbone.
I hadn't heard that one, actually.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's calling it Xbone.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to adopt that for sure. So, I wanted to kind of bring it up because it's huge news. I mean, this kind of thing only happens, once every 10 years at this point for the last console generation.
It's been over 8 years since the Xbox 360. It's kind of incredible that so many Xbox 360s, went that long. I think probably a lot of them had to be replaced.
Yeah, well, they famously had the Red Ring of Death problem.
Right, but I mean, I'm sure they must have done some modifications to the internals of them when people sent them in constantly to be replaced, but they basically didn't change the design at all for 8 years.
Yeah, well, they had a few refreshes here and there. Remember, they did the Slim, and they did the they did like various Call of Duty versions and stuff like that. I mean,
oh right, sure, they colorized it. Yeah,
they did a little bit here and there, but you know, nothing like a brand new console. So this is really exciting to see happen. And you know, I don't want to belabor the point a little bit because this news is a little bit old since we're kind of getting back into the swing here since we missed last week. If you want a full, thorough, detailed rundown, what you want to do is go to the episode of Entertainment 2.0. Where they talk about the Xbox One, and you can, you know, they went over it a few times over, so you'll want to go listen to that if you really want details about it. But
or check out the blog post on the Digital Media Zone, yep. Which is actually just a fantastic, very succinct summary that really caught me up to speed on what's going on with this. And I think it's very fitting that the longest paragraph on this blog post is under television and entertainment.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're trying to be a media center, right? And that makes sense to me. Microsoft makes very good media centers. And so why not build that into their new hardware platform, right?
Yeah, I think that is what they're after. So they've got this idea that you can plug your cable box into the Xbox and pass the video through and then control it via HDMI CEC or an infrared blaster. So yeah, they're taking that kind of third-party content from the cable companies in this case. And they're also offering a bunch of over-the-top kind of services. So there's no notion of it being a DVR by itself, however, which is what I kind of wanted to see. I kind of wanted to see, you know, something I plug an antenna into that would actually be a DVR, but they're not taking that route. So you're going to have to plug a cable box into it or something like that. So I don't know. It's interesting, and I think that was necessary because that's the current reality of TV. And I think they're doing that right, and I hope that the reality of television changes in the next 10 years.
I'm sure that it will. I actually think, you know, as much as I admire them trying to combine their strengths and the intellectual properties, I think that they're betting on the past here. You know, they're betting on cable boxes. And I don't see those sticking around en masse and getting more popular in the next 8 years.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they really are betting on cable boxes. They're just saying, look, we realize that cable boxes are here now, and you can use it with the Xbox One. But in the future world, you know, we're going to have all of these kind of over-the-top services that are coming through the Xbox and an apps platform that you can deliver content through and stuff like that. I think that's their long-term bet. It's just
that, So you think the design that they've come up with is future-proof on that track?
I'm not sure I'd call it future-proof because it's hard to know what's going to happen unless you're from the future.
Okay, but assuming what you said will happen, is this the best tool for the job?
I think so. So I think for the mass consumer who has cable out there and who is starting to dabble in some of these over-the-top services, I think that is kind of a bargain for that kind of person. Now, that kind of person happens not to be me, so it's a little bit hard for me to read into it. But I think they've got compatibility with cable boxes for now, and they've got an apps platform for later.
Here's the thing, though, Chris. That person has to also play Xbox games.
Well, not necessarily. You don't necessarily have to be a huge gamer with this device. I mean, this...
You don't think so? You think non-gamers will buy it?
No, it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's going to be too expensive for non-gamers to buy. But later in its lifetime, I could see it being more of an entertainment device. But yeah, it's going to be too expensive out of the gate, you know, when you could buy a Roku for $70 or whatever it is now.
Yeah, they have them for $50.
Yeah, for $50. Nice. And the Roku is too good at that for now. But I think throughout the lifetime of the console, I think they're going to start to get into that entertainment game a little bit more than they are right now.
All right. Well, I can appreciate that direction.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll talk about it again in another 5 years or however long this thing lasts.
Okay, sounds good. Well, this plus the digitalmediazone.com article have me feeling very much up to speed.
Yeah, so it, like I said, if you really want to deep dive, you want to go listen to Entertainment 2.0 that they ran down the Xbox. So with that, let's turn on our afterburners. Are you strapped in? Are you ready to go?
Hang on a second. Okay, I'm ready to go.
So more Asus news out of Computex. They're launching the MemoPad HD7, and it's basically a 7-inch tablet with a 5-megapixel camera on the back, a quad-core A7 chip, and it's 1280 by 800. The real kind of shocker is that it's going to be $130.
Yeah, and that's a pretty low-resolution display compared to everything else we've talked about today.
Yep.
But it is a high-quality, low-resolution display. It's IPS, so it's going to look pretty decent at the pixel size that it is. And it's going to be available in a variety of colors. It's going to be offered at 16 gigabytes for $150. And it's also going to have a micro SD slot, so storage is not really an issue on either model. So that's a pretty crazy price point.
So if the 7-inch tablet wasn't good enough for you, then we've got the Asus PhonePad, which is a 6-inch 1080p display with a dual-core chip, 2 gigs of RAM. This is a little bit smaller, but the display is more dense, I suppose, right?
Right. Okay, so they released a 6-inch tablet phone and a 7-inch tablet, and the smaller phone version has twice the resolution of the 7-inch one.
That's downright odd.
That is very odd indeed. They haven't announced price or availability for this one at all. Although they did tell us it comes with a stylus. Yay.
It's got that going for it.
It'll have 3G, but no 4G. I guess this is basically designed to be bought for reasonably cheap off contract. If you don't want a contract and you don't want a tablet, but you want to get as close as you can to both, this is a relatively cheap way to do it. And in non-Computex news, the Microsoft Surface RT is having a promotion. Consumers in the U.S. and Canada can get a free cover with a basic $500 Surface RT. You can get either the touch cover or the type cover with actual clicking keyboard buttons. And, you know, that saves you up to $120 if you wanted to buy a Surface RT.
Yeah, and I had to pay for the cover, so I'm a little jealous. It was kind of expensive, too. It was like $120 for the touch cover. So if you are the kind of person who's going to get a Surface RT, this might push you over the top, I guess.
Yeah. And also great news if you are waiting to buy a Wii U. It's been cut in price by 20% if you shop at Target, I guess. I went from $300 for the basic 8-gigabyte version to just $240.
And I know we've talked about it before, but Intel is launching the its Haswell line of processors. So this is the next generation, and as such, it's got the kind of iterative improvements that you'd expect. It's a 22-nanometer architecture. You've got the new HD 5000 graphics like we're talking about, and they're going to have
Iris graphics.
Right, the Iris graphics. And they're going to have a lot of efficiencies. You're going to have less wattage with this chip than the previous generation, so that means longer battery life, which means win for us.
Right, longer battery life and or smaller batteries and or more high-power displays.
Right, so that's definitely kind of exciting to see that roll out. So we'll have to see what actually happens when this thing comes out, because again, you know, it's kind of this iterative thing where you get small gains, but that actually kind of means a lot. So
right.
Google is slowly updating its Gmail interface, and I haven't gotten this in my account yet, but
neither have I.
They're going to start auto sorting your email for you, so things like social notifications will go to one inbox, and you switch between the inboxes with tabs at the top. So I'm sure everyone will freak out when they get this update because it changes the way their email works, but I'm looking forward to see what happens here. And that said, I usually use an app, so I'm not sure if I'll even notice when it does roll out, but we'll see.
You'll notice eventually, you just won't know when it happened.
That's right.
Now, Apple has quietly released a new iPod Touch. When they released the iPhone 5, they announced an iPod Touch with the new 4-inch HD screen in there. But that was only starting at $300 at up, and they kept the old iPod Touch 4 with the 3.5-inch screen. They just went ahead and got rid of that one and came out with a new 16-gigabyte version with the full 4-inch screen, but they removed the rear-facing camera and the wrist strap clip, and that's for $229.
And HTC has gotten the message that I've been trying to spout for a long time now. They're going to be releasing an HTC One with stock Android on June 26th for $599 in the United States. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, this is probably the most beautiful Android phone that's available in the U.S. right now. And to be able to get it with stock Android, which we both agreed earlier in the show is the best way to get an Android phone, is a total win for consumers. So if you're looking for an unlocked Android phone and you have $600 to spare, this may be one of your best bets.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful device. I think that's probably one of the best-in-class smartphones right now. So it's definitely up there.
Except in terms of repairability.
Right, right.
It ranks even below the iPhone.
Yeah, and you always keep tabs on that in a way that I do not. So that's good to note. So should we turn off the afterburners and get into the end-user stories? What do we have going on here?
So the first is a follow-up to a story that we had from a month ago or so. The White House had launched a Tumblr account, which I have not been following, but one of their first posts noted that their official pronunciation of the .gif file name was GIF with a hard G. Now, I'm bringing this up again because the creator of the .gif file, Steve Wilwhite, has come out publicly on record saying it's a soft G GIF. Now, when we first reported the White House pronunciation story, you came down on their side and you said GIF, and I said, no, I was pretty sure it was GIF. And so I wanted to back up my opinion with cold, hard facts from the creator of the file type and say, hey, maybe it's GIF after all.
See, I always said GIF, and I always was cognizant of the fact that I was probably wrong. But I said it because that's what I'm used to anyway. So I was excited to have the White House back me up. But I guess it isn't so.
Well, I don't know. The White House said it first, so it may become so in the future. Although I don't want to influence the timeline in any way. So I'm not going to come down on the other. But I am going to reaffirm my support for the pronunciation GIF. Kind of like the peanut butter.
All right. All right. Should I try and switch? I feel like it's too late. It's already internal in my brain.
I can't tell you what to do, Chris.
All right, well, let's talk some Windows. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, well, are we going to talk about Windows Blue?
Yes, Windows Blue. We've got some more details about it. And
right, now that was the code name, right? That was just the leaked code name that they were using internally. So they're calling this Windows 8.1. That's the real name of it.
Right, so it's just 8.1, and it's going to be released via the Windows Store. And it's going to be free for all current Windows 8 users. And it does a number of interesting things. They're adding back the start button. Remember, we had talked about whether this was going to happen or not. And it looks like it's going to happen. And it's going to just launch the Metro interface. So it's not going to be like a start menu like you're used to. But so what it's going to do is it's going to launch the list of applications. So they're kind of meeting people in the middle there.
Yeah, that sounds nice. It's still got it boots into the start screen, right?
Right, unless you tell it to otherwise. So they've also they're also going to be adding back a boot to desktop mode.
Ah, okay. Now, how do you feel about that? Do you think that's more options for the consumer, or are they just covering all their bases here? Are they making half steps?
I think the way it was released in the first place was fine, but I also think that this is something that probably should have been in there. They could have avoided a whole news cycle of nonsense if they had just included these two things. And I think it's maybe, they took it up to 11 and they really need to take it back down to 9 or something. They just kind of need to dial it back a little bit. And
I thought this was Windows 8.
Yeah, it's Windows 11.
It's 8.11?
It's 8.11. No, it's it depending on how... There's various Voodoo methods that you can calculate the number of windows that it is. But yeah, it's officially Windows 8. But I mean the amplifier by which they are rocking is tuned up to 11.
Right, 8.11.9. Got it.
There you go. So I think with a lot of this stuff, they just kind of... It was premature, and they pushed it out there anyway. And for what it's worth, I've been using it, and it's been okay. But I do think that by adding these kinds of features, you're going to cover more people, and people won't be quite as frustrated. Because you say, oh, I just want the desktop back, and you just tick the button, and it'll boot to desktop, no big deal. Although, why anyone would boot to desktop instead of booting to an app launcher, I will never understand in the desktop world. But a lot of people wanted it, so here they're providing it.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that makes sense. It's Windows always has been about options, especially on those kind of operating system minutia. But when are you going to be able to get this update?
They're saying around the holidays is when it's going to come out. There's going to be
They haven't even said exactly when yet?
No, not quite. They said there's going to be...
So why are we talking about it?
There's going to be a public preview that's going to happen in June.
Aha. So are you going to be able to get in on that?
Yes. So I think it's a public preview, so I think we'll be able to go in and actually use it. And
aha.
I don't think it's going to be terribly different, but they're adding those small things back. So we'll get some more details later, perhaps.
Okay.
Last thing here. Apparently, you're going to be able to snap as many windows as you want, depending on the resolution of your screen. But you can do 50-50 apps side by side, and you can. There's going to be a lot more flexibility around that.
One window per pixel?
No, I don't think you can quite go that far.
Well, how far can you go? You said I could go as far as I wanted.
No, it depends on the screen resolution. So above a certain screen resolution, you get to pin more apps to the side.
Right. So it depends on the screen resolution. So the maximum number of windows is one window per pixel. I don't want to go any higher than that, Chris.
Yeah,
I don't think they should be required to go any higher than that. But I think that's a reasonable assumption there.
All right.
The software is perfectly capable of it.
All right. Well, good luck with that war that you're going to have fun waging. But I wonder how many apps I could snap side by side with that 4K monitor we were talking about earlier.
Millions.
Millions. One per pixel.
Assuming one per pixel. That's right.
Right. Right.
All right. So our next story is surprise. It's the end user public service announcement. This one just has to do with two-factor authentication. In the last 2 weeks, it's been enabled by Twitter, Evernote, LinkedIn, and Dashlane, which is one of the password management systems. It's one of Lifehacker's favorites. They're pretty good. Not sure if we would recommend them above LastPass or 1Password, which are our current recommendations because that's what Chris and I use. But if you use Dashlane or if you were looking for one and you really wanted your password protection software to use two-factor authentication. Although I think LastPass and 1Password also have two-factor authentication at this point. Anyway, Twitter, Evernote, LinkedIn, Dashlane, if you use them, enable two-factor authentication. End of PSA.
All right, and I just wanted to note, because I'm not really a user of this, I know you've been checking out Vine, but they've released a Vine application for Android now. So they're hitting the 70% or so of the worldwide market with a new Vine application for Android. So I suppose we'll see some more adoption of it. And I know you've been using it here and there, but not a whole ton. But what do you think of Vine?
it's fun to use sometimes, and there are occasionally things where I think a 6-second video with sound is the best way to share some experience of mine with my phone, but it's usually not the case. I mean, I usually end up taking a longer video or maybe making some sort of GIF with an app that does that, or a panorama or a diorama or an Instagramma. But I don't know. Sometimes I use Vine. I still don't understand why I do it. I just do.
That's like me and Foursquare. I have no idea why I still use Foursquare and check into places, but I feel compelled to do it.
Interesting. See, I know people who use Foursquare in order to keep track of the places that they go. And sometimes they use them to get deals, or some people just like the prestige of becoming the mayor of a place. But I guess there are plenty other Foursquare people who use it for no reason. But the thing is, I can't even think of a good reason to use Vine unless you're making 6-second comedy, which some of that stuff is really hilarious, and people are using that platform to their great personal advantage. But other than that, I mean, as a platform for communication, it still seems superfluous. So Android users, have at it. Let's see what you can do with it. Because us iPhone users are mostly just wasting it.
That sounds about right. So you've got a green tech story of the week that we missed the last time we podcast. So what do you got for us this week?
All right. So this is kind of interesting. It caught my eye because there is a contest run by Instructables called the Green Design Contest. And this person has designed a build-it-yourself wind generator that can generate electricity. It's scalable, so you can essentially determine the voltage that you want to get out of it, but it tends to work best and is kind of the instructions are described to build something that produces between 4 and 8 volts, which would be great for charging a phone or a tablet, for example.
All right, so that seems pretty cool. So basically you could be able to get this thing in a box and build it like that? Is that kind of the idea?
You could get it in a box, or you could buy all the parts yourself and do it.
Yeah, you could do either, right?
Right.
Yeah, so that seems kind of cool if you want to offset some of your charging to wind. Although, you know, it's not very windy in my apartment.
Well, then maybe you should go solar, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you know, my keyboard is solar, so I can at least claim that. But yeah, I think that would be more appropriate in my particular situation, at least.
All right. Well, if you live somewhere with a lot of wind and less sun than Chris or I, then you can now build your own wind turbine on the cheap. So I thought that was pretty cool. That's the green tech story.
Cool. So what do we got for tip of the week?
All right. The tip of the week is a bookmarklet that organizes web clippings. As soon as I read this, I thought, oh, it's like Delicious used to be when Delicious was good. Now, the cool thing about this is it's a bookmarklet and web service, so you can use it on any browser fairly simply, and then it will automatically organize all of the links that you share to it into like a cool scrapbooky Pinterest-type page. And so I haven't used it very much yet, and I'm not sure if it's going to replace my main method of saving, which is I basically just use Safari for everything because it syncs automatically between my Mac and my iPhone.
And it has really great bookmarks compared to other browsers.
Right. But I really like what I've seen of this so far. And if you're looking for something that is very easily cross-platform and cross-browser, Keeb is a great way to go. That's K-triple-E-B.
It's they could have done way better on the name.
Well, maybe they'll change it, or maybe they'll get bought. I don't know.
Yeah, but otherwise, this looks really cool. So this is designed to replace Instapaper, is what it looks like to me, right?
I never really used Instapaper, so yeah. I mean, they definitely have similar functionality, but I don't know how they compete directly.
Yeah, maybe with a little less offline kind of nature, but
and with a little bit more fancy web interface.
Right, with a little more fanciness.
Cool, so they've got their own little niche in there, somewhere between Pinterest and Instapaper and Read It Later and
sure.
Pocket and whatnot.
All right, well, let's get into our last story of the week, and it is fantastic. How is this possible?
Well, there are a lot of Legos in the world, and there are a lot of people who like to build things made of Lego, and they have built the largest, most complicated Lego project ever constructed. It took 32 builders 4 months to build a life-size replica of a Star Wars X-Wing.
Just incredible looking. It's 23 tons. That's a lot of Legos. So... It doesn't say here how many Legos it actually is, does it?
More than 5 million.
Yeah, more than 5 million. I guess once you get that many, you can't get an exact number.
Oh, they probably have an exact number.
Yeah, so you have to get in here and check out the photo, because us talking about it doesn't really do it justice. But it's absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Or if you hurry, you can see it in Times Square in New York.
Oh, is it traveling?
It's in Times Square.
So is its engine working?
No. I'm pretty sure its engine is made of Legos.
So they have to, like, tow it around, and it can't actually fly to New York?
I'm pretty sure an X-Wing couldn't fly in our atmosphere anyway, at least not with current human technology.
Right. All right. Well, it's awesome anyway.
Yes, it is. Awesome enough to mention as our kicker. It's definitely a Lego X-Wing.
Definitely. Well, I wanted to, before we got out of here, I just wanted to mention that our fellow DMZer from the digitalmediazone.com, Richard Gunther, has launched his new podcast. So, you know, we've mentioned it in the past few weeks, and it's a podcast about home automation. It's called Home On, and we're going to have a link to the introduction post that he's made. And he's got the first episode out there now, and go have a listen. If home automation is something you're interested in, he's definitely the guy to listen to about it. So the podcast has officially launched, and it's awaiting its iTunes approval and all of that. So exciting times here at the DMZ.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and I haven't listened to the first one. I got to go do that after the show here. So, Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you in some way on the internet, how would they go about doing so?
They could just start writing nasty things in forums about me. And, I mean, I would probably take notice pretty quickly.
You'd eventually figure it out.
Mm-hmm. If you got, like, your own custom domain name, you know, Taylor Marr, the futurist is a jerk.com. That might work. That's probably available.
It probably is available, yeah.
So I'm going to go buy that. That would certainly get my attention. Oh, but if you buy it, then they'd have to come up with something else. But, you know, I guess if they wanted to reach out to me on Google Plus or Twitter, that would be okay too. You can just search for my name. But on Twitter, I'm at TaylorPhone.
I was going to say, there must be an easier way.
No, that seems way more complicated to me than just bad-mouthing me on forums and in custom domain websites.
It does kind of sound like fun.
And easy. Very easy. Come on, Chris. Very easy.
All right, well, if I'm also on Twitter, if you wanted to get at me, I'm at Chris Hale Barnes. So give us a follow. Let us know what you think of the show and all of that. So that'll do it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And you can find more information, including the show notes with all the links, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, the Movie Podcast, and now Home On. And you can also send us some feedback. Our email is theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. Together, we are at @theenduser. Join us live in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr, the futurist, is at jerk.com.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.